Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we are continuing our series called Life in the Heights. This is Life in the Heights Part 4. Tonight I want to speak about issues that come up on Motzei Shabbos, issues that come up in the Heights. Now, Shabbos is over everywhere, correct? Everywhere on the planet, at some point, Shabbos is over. That's just the way it works. In our shul, we have a practice that we end Shabbos, or I should say that we daven Ma'ariv at 47 minutes after Shkia. 47 minutes after sunset. Now, this practice bothered me for a very, very long time because it's not the normal thing that's done. In most places of the planet, you end Shabbos an hour after candle lighting, which is 42 minutes after Shkia, no? Right, let's do the math. If candle lighting is 18 minutes before sunset, so an hour after candle lighting will be 42 minutes after Shkia. And technically speaking, you know, someone in the Heights asked me, someone in our community asked me, she said that she had to work on Motzei Shabbos, she had a night shift, and I forget exactly, but that time of year, basically, she would have to leave like right away, right after Shabbos, to go and work. So at what point can you end Shabbos? What's the earliest time that you can end Shabbos? So at that time, I answered. I said, I don't want to say it publicly. But since I got that question that one time, I have gotten this question many times. So I figure I may as well say it publicly. When is Shabbos over? In Breuer's, when is Shabbos over, by the way?
Three stars.
Okay, so that's like a Jewish. Okay, so let's read what it says in Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch first of all writes that Ma'achrim Tfilas Arvis Kedei Lahosif Mechol Al HaKodesh. Right, the first halacha is that we daven Ma'ariv late in order to add some extra time, extra weekday time, add it into Kodesh. That's a mitzvah d'oraisa, most assume. Gemara Rosh Hashanah Daf Tes learns from Me'erev Ad Erev Tishpesu Shabbatchem that there is a mitzvah of Tosefes Shabbos. Most assume it's a mitzvah d'oraisa. So you have to add on to Shabbos at the beginning. That's the 18 minutes beforehand when you light candles. Or even if you don't accept Shabbos in the 18 minutes, at some point you should accept Shabbos before Shabbos actually begins. That's what we spoke about last week, no? To try to verbally accept Shabbos before it begins. But you're also supposed to add on to Shabbos at the end. One of the ways that we add onto Shabbos at the end is we daven Ma'ariv when Shabbos is over. In theory, you could daven Ma'ariv before Shabbos is over and just finish Ma'ariv at the end time of Shabbos, no?
And not say Atochan Antanu?
Again?
And not say Atochan Antanu?
You could say Atochan Antanu in Shmona Esrei also. Theoretically speaking, you're allowed to make Havdalah while it is still Shabbos. Just like I can make Kiddush before Shabbos, I can make Havdalah on Shabbos. The Gemara in Brachos tells me, right? This is understood because Kiddush and Havdalah probably is not an act of sanctifying the day, but it is rather an act of marking the day as different than all other days. And if I have an obligation to say that this day is different than all other days, I could do it even on Shabbos. I could say Havdalah on Shabbos, no? Some of the poskim say, Rachman Watson, the situation that a person loses a relative on Shabbos. So Al Pi Halacha, you don't make Havdalah that Matzah Shabbos, no? Because Matzah Shabbos, you'll be an owning already. So some say maybe you should do this trick, which is make Havdalah on Shabbos, because you're not an owning on Shabbos, and get the mitzvah of Havdalah that way. Again, it requires a tremendous amount of presence of mind. Most people are, like, sad, and they don't want to do this. And most poskim say you shouldn't do it, because making Havdalah on Shabbos...
Could use an Eish,
No, you can't use Eish. I can't... What am I... I can't light a fire. Are you saying if I had it burning beforehand? I can't. An electric light. Yeah. Maybe. Perhaps.
It's still Shabbos. Why are you making Havdalah?
I'm making Havdalah because I have a mitzvah to show that Shabbos is special. by talking about the differences between various things. And I can, so I can't do malacha after, right? My son, when he heard about this trick, he's like, oh my gosh, this is awesome. Lum, this finally came in handy. I'll make Havdalah at 9 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
And I'll watch TV.
Yeah,
you can't.
No, correct, you can't do that, right? That is strictly forbidden.
But
the idea of Havdalah, the Rambam explains, is to say that this day is different than all other days. And I say, I speak about divisions. And you could even do that on Shabbos. That's the halacha. So now, that's why you could theoretically daven Ma'ariv beforehand. But we don't do that because we want Tosefa Shabbos. We want to add a few minutes onto Shabbos. That's what it says. Then, it says in Shulchan Aruch, you have to be careful not to do malacha until you see three small stars. The stars should not be spread out. They should be ritzufim together. If it's a cloudy day, you should wait until all the suffix left. Now, theoretically speaking, Shabbos ends when you see three medium-sized stars. But I'm not sure what's a medium star. So I wait until I see small stars. Three small stars, because when they have three small stars, presumably there are medium stars also. Well, one second. How does that work? So some poskim say, oh, what you need to do is see a total of six stars. Once you have a total of six stars, and three are big and three are little, so you know, even if the big are super gargantuans, and the little are medium, but you're still okay. That's what the Tiferes Yisrael says.
What you see doesn't reflect the real size of the stars.
What we see does not really reflect the actual size of the stars, but the halacha is aware, and halacha is based on our perception, and the assumption is darkness in halacha, nighttime, is defined as tzeis hakochavim, which means medium-sized stars. But for Shabbos, we're not sure, so we say go for small stars. The Chazon Ish just quoted a saying, once you have 10 stars out there, even though they all look the same, you can assume that there's three small ones.
What's the big deal with small ones versus big ones?
Because big stars apparently will come out earlier than medium stars, and medium stars will come out earlier than small stars. It takes a greater degree of darkness to see a smaller star. That's the assumption.
Oh, okay.
Right? And nightfall in halacha is defined as three medium stars, but for Masa Shabbos we try to have three small stars. Right? By Masa Shabbos we have three small stars. That's the halacha. That's what the Mishnah Berurah writes. Even though technically speaking, right, Mishnah Berurah comments that technically speaking we should just not do malacha until after Shabbos, but we wait to daven Ma'ariv. And then it says that really you need medium-sized stars. We're not sure what's a medium-sized star, so we do small stars. Wonderful. Now, when does Shabbos really end? So most poskim feel that in the New York area, Shabbos ends not based, again, it's hard in our communities, if you're going to try to look for stars, we have so much light pollution, you're not going to see none, right? Or you won't see anything, I should say. Right? So now, when is Shabbos over? So most assume it's based on degrees of darkness. And in the New York area, it's assumed to be Tzeis HaKochavim, the degrees of darkness, at some point between 25 and 32 minutes after sunset, depending on the time of year. That means the longest amount of time all year for darkness is 32 minutes after Shkia. That's the sheet of the Alter Rebbe. That's the mainstream sheet among poskim. Although Shulchan Aruch seems to follow a position called Rabbeinu Tam, that Shabbos does not end until 72 minutes after sunset, the Alter Rebbe writes in his Siddur that that's what Shulchan Aruch writes in Aruch Chaim Reish Samach Aleph. But in Yerideh and Hilchos Mila, Shulchan Aruch says that Shabbos ends like what the Gaonim say Shabbos ends, which for our purposes is 25 or 32 minutes, depending on the time of year. I tell people, you know what? Matzah Shabbos, really the earliest it could end is 35 minutes after Shkia. I tell people, because you have Tosefa Shabbos, you have to add a few minutes on. So 32, 35 minutes after Shki is when Shabbos ends. But we're not exactly sure how much time to add on for Tosefah Shabbos. Taisus and Beitza says, I don't know how much time. I found a shita of Rabbi Yaakov Emden. Rabbi Yaakov Emden in his Siddur writes that you should add after Shabbos 15 minutes of Tosefah Shabbos. He says you should have 15 minutes before Shabbos. You should light candles. We light candles 18 minutes beforehand. He says you should light 15 minutes beforehand. And you should keep 15 minutes after Shabbos also. So then I finally figured out. I asked Rabbi Schneidman, how come Mount Sinai keeps 47 minutes? He didn't remember. I think that's the answer, though. 47 minutes is 32 plus 15. Since the latest Matzei Shabbos all year in the New York area is 32, and you add 15, that's how we get 47. When I first became the rabbi here, like people in the show were like very upset about this. Like I had a gabbai meeting. Rabbi Hilowitz, all of a shalom, like really defended me. I'm like, I'm not changing like these manim. And like it does, and like one of the guys like, it doesn't make any sense, and how come we daven ma'ariv so much after like other shuls in town? I'm like, it doesn't bother me. To keep a few extra minutes of Shabbos, I think, is a good thing. Especially, let's be honest, in Mount Sinai, where people are likely to spend an hour and a half after Havdalah schmoozing in the social hall, you may as well. Right? This is the world according to Schwartz. I might be wrong, but this is my approach. But I think I understand the idea of 47 minutes based on that Rabbi Yaakov Emden and his Siddur. So far, so good? Next.
With the end of
the Tanis? So the end of Tanis, I'm a big makel on that. It seems to me that for Dairaisas, again, the end of every Tanis besides Yom HaKippurim. Yom HaKippurim, we keep the same as Shabbos. But every other fast day, I think you can end the fast 32 minutes after Shkia, latest. Depending on Asar B'Tavis, theoretically, could end 25 minutes after Shkia. Mm-hmm. When I was the rabbi in Riverdale during the summer, so I asked Rabbi Willig, what time should I announce the fast is over? Rabbi Willig said, don't announce when the fast is over, ever. His approach is that, you know, me'ikar hadin, you could say by a derabbanan fast, a regular fast day, that the fast ends technically right after Bein Hashmashos, which maybe is 13 and a half minutes after Shkia, maybe 15 minutes, something like that. Rabbi Willig says, don't announce when the fast is over. Someone's not feeling well, let me eat 15 minutes after Shkia. Depends how it's going. That's his approach. I thought that was interesting. People, however, I couldn't get away with that because people want to know when is it over. So when we put out our calendar, I set the calendar that fasts in 35 minutes after Shkia, which is earlier than any other place in town, basically, which is really 32 minutes plus this. I try to add 2 minutes because of the following thing. When they talk about sunset, does sunset mean when the top of the sun goes beneath the horizon or when the bottom of the sun goes beneath the horizon? Okay, the bottom of the sun goes beneath the horizon before the top of the sun. Everyone agree to that?
Yes.
Right, this is Goinus. Now, it takes around 2 minutes for that to happen. So the New York Times defines Shkia as being when the sun begins to drop beneath the horizon. Right? But some poskim feel, this is something I heard from Rabbi Willig. Rabbi Willig is like a math guy. So he's into Zmanim. Some poskim feel that Shkia is really when the top of the sun drops beneath the horizon. If that's the case, so we should add 2 minutes on. And just to make things simpler for those who put together the calendar, I don't say, you know, Asar B'Tavis will end at 27 minutes and other fast days, and I say everything 35 minutes.
What about Tisha B'Av?
Tisha B'Av also 35 minutes.
Like,
again, people, like, if you want to keep longer, you can keep longer.
Tisha B'Av is like Yom Kippur?
Shulchan Aruch writes that we keep Tisha B'Av like Yom Kippur in terms of pregnant women. As a technical matter of halacha, that's also not completely true. The Aruch HaShulchan writes that within 30 days of having a baby, you don't have to fast on Tisha B'Av. On Yom Kippurim, you have to fast after 3 days after having a baby, assuming that you're feeling well. We don't exactly equate them, and everybody knows Yom Kippur is the Raisa, Tisha B'Av is the Rabbanon. Also, just emotionally speaking, I want to keep Yom Kippur longer. That feeling of being close to Hashem, Lefnei Hashem Titarvi, you want to extend it. Tisha B'Av, you want to get rid of it! Right? Who wants to keep Tisha B'Av? Again, this is not halachic. This is emotion. This is kishkes. But it seems to me that there is strong room to distinguish between them.
And so, Nidche, not Nidche, does that play a role?
Again?
Nidche, not Nidche, does that play a role?
Generally not. Nidche, not Nidche plays a role in terms of kulas, of breaking your fast on Tisha B'Av and the like.
Or,
I don't think so, because even if it's Nidche, that's those the din de Rabbana, you should fast Tisha B'Av on the 10th day of Av that year. Something. So yeah, I don't think that really plays a role. Now, so this is my general approach to Zmanim. In our world, no one holds like the Rabbi Nutan. In the Rabbi Nutan's position of 72 minutes, Rabbi Willig always points out his shiur about Zmanim, and this would get a little complicated, so I won't like flesh it out completely. Rabbi Willig always points out in his shiur about Zmanim that 72 minutes is probably a mistake. If you really hold like the Rabbi Nutan, what you should do is keep a minimum of 96 minutes, or like the briskers talk about a zexel or an achtel, right? An achtel is a third of the day, right? It's an achtel is one is an eighth of the day. An eighth of the day is 3 hours, right? A zexel is 6 hours. Six halachic.
Four.
4 hours, right? 4 hours. Thank you. You could tell I was a history major, no? So, technically speaking, the Rabbi Nutan is probably not 72 minutes. It's very hard to assume 72 minutes. The main develop 72 minutes. Rabbi Willig's approach is that no one holds like the 72-minute shita, and practically speaking, if they would really hold the Rabbi Nutan, they'd have to hold a minimum of 96 minutes. There are some who do that. I think Rabbi Twersky, Rabbi Meir Twersky, I think keeps Shabbos until like whatever. That, you know, he's Orthodox, right? Whatever. But I think there is strong grounds to assume, like the Alter Rebbe writes, that even the Mechaber, who assumes like Rabbi Nutam and Orechayim, since in Yerideya he rejects the Rabbi Nutam, so as a matter of halacha, we can not hold like the Rabbi Nutam. Let's go on. In Shul, we make Havdalah. Now, unlike Kiddush, which we spoke about last week, and we make Kiddush in Shul for reasons of tradition, right? They used to make Kiddush in Shul because they used to have poor people slept over.
Right.
But we don't have poor people sleep over in our shul anymore, no? So why do we make Kiddush in shul? Probably tradition. Maybe it's to be motzi some people somehow. Maybe it could be to be motzi them with a d'oraisa, right? People who won't have a Shabbos meal. Maybe, I don't know. But fact is, we make Kiddush in shul and no one is yotze with Kiddush in shul. Havdalah in shul, people are yotze. Not only that, are people yotze Havdalah in shul, but our shul, I would contend, has the largest number of women anywhere in the United States who come to Havdalah Motzei Shabbos. No?
That sounds...
There are people who come to Havdalah and like violate serious yisurim in the Torah, like eating kneidlach on Pesach or something.
Oh,
right? Right? Now, there are people who come to Havdalah who I don't see the entire rest of Shabbos. There are Havdalah is a big thing in shul. Now, people, I mean women, right? Women are coming to Havdalah in shul. So, let's just talk briefly about Havdalah in shul. Havdalah in shul, you can be Yotzei Havdalah. Unlike Kiddush in shul, that no one gets the mitzvah of Kiddush, with Havdalah, you get the mitzvah of Havdalah in shul. Why the distinction? After Frida's question, if you're nice, I'll tell you.
I'm wondering if this thing about the women that you say you see at Havdalah, but you don't see most of the rest of the day, does that have something to do with what I consider a superstition that women can't make Havdalah from themselves and have to hear it from a man?
So we're going to talk about that in a few minutes, and we will try to show that it's not really a superstition. Not really. But it is an interesting idea. It makes it to Shulchan Aruch. That approach that one should not make a dough for themselves is an approach. That women should not make Havdalah for themselves makes it to Shulchan Aruch. We'll talk about it in 3 minutes. You gotta give me a little bit of time. Just a little bit. Now, how come I do not fulfill Kiddush and Shulba, I do fulfill Havdalah? The answer is that Kiddush requires Kiddush b'makom Se'uda. And no one eats a meal in the Shul. Again, we spoke about those weeks when we have a Shul dinner, etc. But Havdalah doesn't require makom Se'uda. So therefore, you can be Yotzei Havdalah in Shul. Now, a few things. Like Shulchan Aruch writes that Seder Havdalah is Yayin B'Samim Ner Havdalah V'Sim Alnach Yav Neh. No? If you want to know the sequence of brachos by Havdalah, just remember Yav Neh. That's where I went to Yeshiva. Yayin B'Samim Ner Havdalah.
And
those are the. That's.
You said you work up the face. Gefen.
Yayin.
Besamim.
Ner.
Havdalah.
Who's that? Whose approach is.
Rabbi
Schwab said that. That's beautiful.
Yeah,
right? That we're moving up. That wine goes into the mouth. Besamim is through the nose, which it, for most people is above their mouth. Right? Ner, you see with your eyes, which is above your nose. Again, for most people. I think Ernie and Bert have their eyes, and but they're like not. Regular people, and Havdalah is in the brain. So that's beautiful that it moves up the ladder. I never heard that. I really like that. Thank you.
And this year, we're going to do Yaknahaz.
So we'll do Yaknahaz. We'll talk about that like on Yontif when we get there. And the regular Shas, we do Yayin B'Samim near Havdalah. Fine. And you have to be careful that the kos is not pogum. In other words, that no one drank from the cup beforehand. And then the Rama writes, V'nahagu lomar kodem havdala sha'osem babayis hinekel Yeshua si. Hinekel Yeshua si, these psukim of Simin Tov that we say at the beginning of Havdalah, the Rama says we recite those psukim on when we recite Havdalah at home. That implies that the Havdalah that's recited in Shul, we do not recite Hinekel Yeshua Si beforehand. Why not? Good question. So the Aruch HaShulchan comments over here. I give you the Aruch HaShulchan. The Aruch HaShulchan writes that in Shul you start from Borei Pri HaGafen, but the Balabai you start from Hinekel Yeshua Si, Ushavtim Ayin Bel Sason, etc. Some say additional psukim, like do ma'isa ora, and we finish off kain tialanu, etc. How come we don't say it in Shul? He asks. So he says, k'dei l'lamin l'hahamon she'in zemei havdalah. Point one is, you want to show people that, you know what, if you don't hear kinekel Yeshua, see? It's not, you didn't miss havdalah, it's okay. So to teach them, that's why we don't do it in Shul. Not bad. Not bad. What happens, by the way, if you come in, if you hear, if you miss the bracha of Borei Pri HaGafen? You'll say Havdalah? If you miss the bracha of Besamim, of Ner, we'll talk about that in a few minutes. It happens that those things are probably also not really part of Havdalah. As long as you hear the bracha of Hamavdil Ben Kodesh Lechol, that's really Havdalah. But some people think that Hinekel Yeshua Si is part of the Havdalah, especially, you know, if you have like a musical Havdalah. Hinekel Yeshua Si. Right? That's also like a Heitz thing. Especially if you have a musical Havdalah, people like, you're not Yotzei, you can't start the song in the middle. Says the Aruch HaShulchan, to show it's not part of Havdalah, that's why we skip the psukim in Shul. Moreover, since they said the psukim of V'yitan Lecha beforehand, and those psukim of V'yitan Lecha add bracha to the entire week, etc. So therefore, right? Therefore, you don't have to say psukim of a bracha of Hinekel Yeshua Si. Now, it seems to me, I remember growing up as a kid, I was very upset that they would say Hinekel Yeshua Si in Shul before Havdalah. This was like one of the things that bothered me. And I couldn't figure out why, and I asked the rabbi, not Rabbi Wurzberger, I asked the other rabbi, whatever, and he didn't know anything, and fun. So, he didn't know the answer. Later on, I realize that the minhag, the shul saying Kinei Kel Yeshua Si by Havdalah, is probably because in congregation Shari Tefillah, where I grew up, the congregation did not recite V'yiten Lecha. And since it did not recite V'yiten Lecha, so then you need, according to the second answer, the Aruch HaShulchan, it makes sense to say, Hinei Kel Yeshua Si. In our shul, in Mount Sinai also, we don't say V'yiten Lecha. I happen to say it myself. I think it's a beautiful thing to say V'yiten Lecha. It's also, you know, in other shuls, in Breuer's, you say, L'David Baruch. Right? So, we don't say those psukim. Those are additional psukim of a bracha to delay the end of Shabbos. Right? Because we don't say it, maybe that's why we say, Hinei Kel Yeshua Si. We're not saying, V'yiten Lecha. I'm not sure. But it seems to me like it's not crazy. Okay, now, the Mechaber writes that if you had in mind not to be Yotze with the Havdalah in Shul, then you have to make Havdalah at home. Meaning, you can be Yotze with Havdalah in Shul. The Mishnah Brura says that the practice is that people do not have in mind to be Yotze Havdalah in Shul because they're going to go home and make Havdalah for their wives or something like that. Now, in our community, where the vast majority of people are single, and among the married people also, many are husband and wife, are in shul, Matzah Shabbos. No? So therefore, I think most people are Yotze Havdalah in shul. Now, this will create a few issues that we'll have to talk about in a minute. Let me hear from Lev, and then we'll skip that issue about women specifically. We'll come back to it towards the end.
If you were Yotze with Havdalah and Shul, and then there's someone, you go home and you know that there's someone who has not heard Havdalah, can you make Havdalah for that person?
Theoretically speaking, we pass in Afa Pisha Yotza Motzi, that you can. It's better if the person makes Havdalah themselves, but if the person doesn't know how to, or doesn't want to, etc. What?
NCSY Venture. That's why God made the NCSY.
Correct. Okay, well, we'll talk about women. We'll talk about women separately. Now, let's go on. So a very common shalom that comes up in shul is people want to be Yotze Havdalah in shul. That's the practice. And in shul, we probably have now 25 bags of besamim, maybe 30 bags of besamim. So what happens if by the time the besamim gets to you, the Baal Tefillah has already gone on in Havdalah? What do you do in that case? Do you make a bracha on the besamim? But you should not make a bracha on the besamim in the middle of the Havdalah, once the guy started going on, because then you're not paying attention to the Havdalah. But do you have to make a bracha on the besamim after Havdalah is over? Right? The Boimir Mo'orei Ha'esh, everyone can like see it at the same time. Right? But the besamim, do you have to make a bracha? So there is a discussion about this in the Shmiras Shabbos Kehilchasa. It's in chapter 60, note 94. And the Shmiras Shabbos discusses that first Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach said that maybe you have to make a new bracha because, you see, when I make Borei Pri HaGafen in Havdalah, and then even though there's a long interruption, you say, right, Yavne, Besamim, Ne'er, then Havdalah, but that's not really an interruption because, right, I'm going to drink the wine after everything. That's not an interruption because that's where you're supposed to do it. But over here, right, I'm not smelling my besamim until the very end. I'm supposed to smell my besamim earlier. If I'm not going to smell my besamim until after Havdalah is over, maybe I should make my own bracha. That's what Shlomo Zalman felt on his own. Originally. Then later on, Reb Shlomo Zalman said, you know what? Maybe you don't have to make a bracha because one could argue that since you had in mind that you're going to be smelling the besamim later on, that's good enough. He tries to bring a proof from this Mishnah Brura and Siman Reish Ayin Aleph Sifkatan Ayin Ches. Again, you could look at the Mishnah Brura inside later on. The case is that a person makes Kiddush, And for Kiddush, you need wine. Let's say you're bad luck. I've had the shayla many times on the Heights also. We used to have the shayla in Shul too often, because we used to keep a bottle of grape juice, please don't tell anyone, under the bima. Now, one thing that happens to grape juice when it stays under the bima for weeks and weeks and weeks on end is grape juice at some point ends up having a smell something as bad as Gehenna. Maybe worse. And it has a taste that is somewhere between, I don't know, like, whatever. You know, the worst beans in Harry Potter, right, are not as bad as the really old grape juice. So, are you Yotze Havdalah or Kiddush? Are you Yotze Kiddush if you make a Bari Priya Goffin and then you go, right, and like it tastes awful? Are you Yotze Kiddush? So it says in Shulchan Aruch, you know what? Kiddush has to be done on wine, and it wasn't wine. Not only do you have to repeat the Bari Pri HaGafen on the new wine that you bring out, but you have to make new Kiddush. Because there was an interruption. However, the Mishnah Berurah comments, let's say you had in mind that you're going to drink more wine later on. Let's say I'm making Kiddush, and I know it's a Shabbos meal, and I'm going to drink some of that Moscato stuff that some people call wine, imo the meal, something like that. I'm going to drink more imo the meal. So in that case, since I had a mind to drink more, so I don't have to repeat my Kiddush, right? The Borei Pri HaGafen, right? The Mishnah Berurah comments. Mimkomakom hayadaito mitzchilo b'shas brecha lishtos yayin yoser ein tzach lavar shenis bari priya goffin. I don't have to make another bari priya goffin. I made a bari priya goffin. The stuff that, disgusting, but I had in mind for other wine also, because I'm going to drink more wine during the meal, so that bari priya goffin is going on the other wine, just fill up another cup of wine, then you're okay. So says Rav Shlomo Zalman, maybe that case is somehow analogous to this case of besamim. That if I'm making a bracha, bori mine besamim, right, you made a bracha in middle. You're going to say it's an interruption. No, it's not an interruption, because you have a mind to smell later on. The person making the bracha knows that many of the people in shul are not going to get their bag of besamim until after Havdalah is done. So then maybe that bracha is going on those besamim later on, and therefore you don't have to make a bracha. That's what he concludes. That's an interesting point. One other issue that comes up sometimes in shul with Havdalah is there are some people in our shul who are frum. A few. And the definition of frum is, of course, we all know how long your Shmona Esrei is. And there are some people who are still in the middle of Shmona Esrei. I don't mean this seriously. This is like tongue-in-cheek stuff. Right? There are some people who are still in the middle of Shmona Esrei when they are making Havdalah. So the person decides, I'm going to stop and listen to Havdalah Mel Shmona Esrei. Can you do that?
I don't think so.
Okay, that's one vote against it. I am just listening. But there's a halacha of Shomea Ka'ona. There's a halacha that when I hear something, it says, if I said it, so I'm Yotzei. Now, let's say I'm in middle of Shmona Esrei and the Chazan comes to Kedusha. What do? Oh, I listen.
You stop and you...
I stop and I listen. Now, that issue actually is a big machlekes. There are three shittos in Mishonim, what you should do. Do we assume that Shomea Ka'one is like you're actually saying it? And therefore, if I'm in Shmona Esrei and I stop to listen to Kedusha, I'm talking in middle of Shmona Esrei and that's bad. Because Shomea Ka'one is like I say it. Maybe Shomea Ka'one is not like I'm saying it. Maybe Shomea Ka'one is like a halachic way that I'm Yotzei. And there are some who assume the razzle-dazzle shita is that maybe Shomea Ka'one is not going to help in middle of Shmona Esrei because you're not allowed to talk in middle of Shmona Esrei. You can't be honest, therefore you can't say Shomea Ka'one. It's like a slightly different version. It's not a hefsek. It's that you can't say Shomea Ka'one. So Reb Tzvi Pesach Frank in a tshuva here that I give you, Simen Nun Tes, Reb Tzvi Pesach Frank says that in middle of Shmona Esrei, in middle of Shmona Esrei, he argues you are not going to be Yotzei Havdalah. Maybe by Kaddish and Kedusha, we could say that you're Yotzei, because if you're not Yotzei, you'll miss Kaddish and Kedusha. But by Havdalah, if you're not Yotzei in the middle of your Shemona Esrei, you'll make your own Havdalah after. What's the big deal? And if that's the case, then you can make your own Havdalah after, so you're not even Yotzei in the middle of Shemona Esrei. This Shaila comes up all the time, that Reb Tzvi Pesach Frank says you're not Yotzei. Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach is inclined that you are Yotzei. That you shouldn't, ideally you should not be Yotzei Havdalah, but if you did it, you would be Yotzei, providing you're between brachos. If you're in middle of a bracha Shemona Esrei, you're not Yotzei. You're between brachos, you are. That's what Shlomo Zalman says. Rabbi Gnath, in his new volume that came out, it's Gan Shoshan Volume 3. I wrote a review of it in the last issue of Jewish Action. So Rabbi Gnath has a piece, has an essay about Shomea Ka'una. And Rabbi Gnath quotes that Rav Soloveitchik felt that Shomea Ka'una, even Rashi, who says that you're supposed to stop in Middle Shemona Esrei for Kaddish and Kedusha, or at least for Kedusha, we should say, that's because Kedusha is connected to Shemona Esrei. They're like the same unit. The proof is the Chazen says Shemona Esrei and does Kedusha in the middle. But Havdalah has no connection to your Shemona Esrei. Atachonatanu does, but the regular Havdalah, Bar Nebusamim, Bar Mareha Eish, there's no Bar Priyagofen. You can't, in Mil Shemona Esrei, you can't just make a Bar Priyagofen. I can't. So therefore, maybe you're not Yotzei, even according to Rashi. That's what Rav Soloveitchik said. I'm not exactly sure how to paskin. People ask me this Shaila pretty often. What I tell people is it's a good idea in these situations to hear Havdalah from someone else after. Usually you could find somebody else. It's not, Havdalah is not such an exotic commodity, that you can usually find someone else who's going to make Havdalah be Yotzei with somebody else, because I think it is a serious question as to whether you can be Yotzei Havdalah when you are in the middle of Shemona Esrei. Okay, let's just talk for two more minutes. One of the reasons why so many women come to Havdalah in Shul is because this thing, right, Frida had an expression, you weren't so fond of this practice that women don't make Havdalah. It's actually in the Beis Yosef here. I have a section on the sheets called Havdalah for Men and Women, which is really about women. In the Beis Yosef, he quotes that according to the Orchos Chaim, women are not obligated in Havdalah. You see, it goes like this. Shamar v'zachar b'dibur echad. Women are obligated in Kiddush, because everyone who's obligated in the mitzvah lo sasei of Shabbos is obligated in the mitzvah sasei of Shabbos. No? So since women can't do malacha on Shabbos, they also have the mitzvah sasei of Shabbos of Kiddush. Women can make Kiddush. We spoke last week. Women can be multi men with Kiddush. Women have a full obligation of Kiddush. Question. Women are obligated in all mitzvahs asei of Shabbos. So women are obligated in Shalosh Shudas. They're obligated in Lechem Mishnah. Havdalah, is that a mitzvah asei of Shabbos? Or is that a mitzvah asei of Matzei Shabbos?
According to the way you framed it initially, it was...
It's a Shabbos thing, right? It's a way of saying, that could be. But alternatively, maybe Havdalah is a way. Rav Soloveitchik on one occasion said that he thought Havdalah is like the Kiddush for the week. I sanctify Shabbos, but we believe that we also have to sanctify the Chol. We have to be Mekadesh HaSachol. And the Kiddush that I say for the week is Havdalah. I am sanctifying all the activities I do during the week. That would be Havdalah. It's a Matzei Shabbos activity, not a Shabbos activity.
So you needed Tosefos. You couldn't say it on Shabbos itself, like you said initially.
Correct. According to that, in theory, right, you cannot say it on Shabbos. But what's interesting is, if Havdalah is a Matzei Shabbos activity, so one could argue it's a regular mitzvah saseh shazman grama that women are exempt from. Now, this is a hard thing to say, because we know that Ashkenazi women shake a lulav. Ashkenazi women hear shofar, right? So we make brachos mitzvah saseh shazman grama. Nonetheless, there's a whole school in poskim that maybe women only perform mitzvah saseh shazman grama when there's an action that they do. But if the entire mitzvah is just a bracha, like Kiddush Levana,
no, you smell like
Havdalah. So, but that's like, That's not the real Havdalah. The Ne'er, the Besamim, that's not the real Havdalah. The real Havdalah is just the Brach of Hamavdom and Kodesh L'chol. So some say women are not obligated. Now this position makes it to Shulchan Aruch. Right? In Reish Tzadivav Sifches, it says women are obligated in Havdalah. Some disagree. The Ramah therefore writes, women should not make Havdalah on their own, they should hear it from men. However, why? Because in deference to this opinion of the Archos Chaim, that women are not obligated in Havdalah, therefore women should not make Havdalah on their own. Because, right, women, that's what it says in Shulchan Aruch, that's what the Ramah quotes.
Why bother to say it at all?
Well, maybe they are obligated.
Either I'm obligated or I'm not. Half obligated.
No, it's a question.
But you resolve it. You always resolve it in favor of making the women less. You do.
I'm not doing anything over here. I'm just reading sources.
The religion does.
I'm just reading sources. Now, what's interesting to note is when Shlomo Zalman Arba points out that this opinion in the Beis Yosef, the opinion of the Archos Chaim, that women are obligated, that women are exempt from Havdalah, if you look in the actual source of the Archos Chaim himself, he doesn't say it. The Beis Yosef quotes it, but he doesn't say it. I give you the Archos Chaim over here. He doesn't say it. Now, this presents some discussion. There is a lot to say about women and Havdalah. Time is getting a little bit late. There's a lot to say about women and the Bracha Barim Aish. The Bir Halacha says maybe women aren't obligated in Barim Oreha Aish, and therefore they should not make the Bracha themselves a Barim Aish. And Moshe Feinstein says, I give you the tshuva, says that women do make Barei Morei Ha'esh against the suffix of the Bir Halacha. There's much more to say about this, but time is late, and I already made some of you upset, so we'll break over here. Yeah.
We have a superstition that women don't drink the wine.
So there's a superstition that women don't drink the wine from Havdalah. Rav Shechter in his Sefer Be'ikvei Hatzon has a lomdasha explanation of that practice. I once saw Rav Shnei Kotler at a wedding, whatever it is. One thing that I can tell you is definitely a superstition and has no halachic merit is when they tell you that if you drink Havdalah wine, you will grow a beard. And that's why women don't drink Havdalah wine, because they don't want to grow a beard. This old...
somebody's tale.
I don't know what. It's a stupid tale. It's wrong. There is an article that... What's his name? You know, in the Jewish Action magazine? So... one of the two guys who's into Trelas, Ari...
Oh,
Zivotofsky. So Ari Zivotofsky writes these articles about things that people think are true but really aren't. So one of them, he talks about, what's the truth of women drinking Havdalah wine? So around 3-4 years ago, he wrote this, there's really no basis in normative Judaism for women not to drink Havdalah wine. Okay, Chevra, you should have a good night.
The little boys
lined
up for Kiddush wine.
Yeah.
Is
that a halachic implication? The little boys lined up for Kiddush wine. So, yeah, because the Kiddush that's made in Shul, someone should drink the wine in order to be Yotzei, the Borei Pri HaGofen, in order. The person who makes Kiddush isn't supposed to drink. It's not Kiddush Makom Seuda, but it's an insult to the cup. So, therefore, the little kids line up and they get Kiddush. The one time I davened in Friday night in Breuer's a few years ago, it was probably 10 years ago, before I became the rabbi here. So there was an SAR Shabbaton, and they davened in Breuer's Friday night. So I came to Breuer's Friday night, and I davened, and I had my daughter with me, who was probably 4 years old. And everyone is lining up. And I remembered as a kid in Sherith Israel in Baltimore, the boys and girls would line up to take... Sherith Israel was like Breuer's. Sherith Israel was a Yekesh Shul. I remember as a kid, the girls would line up and get Kiddush. So I told my daughter she should go and line up. And then I see all the faces drop. And like, what's going on here? I don't know. I don't feel bad about it. What can we do? Okay, Chaver, have a good night.